Voters in Britain head to... Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Coming up this hour, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said that he'll release a draft of health care legislation to Republican colleagues and to the public, and it could be happening as soon as tomorrow, but that's not soon enough as far as some members of the public are concerned, and some legislators, Democrats for sure, and some Republicans as well. What it looks like so far, and we're going to hear about what we know about it so far, is that the Senate version will enact deeper cuts to Medicaid, to repeal or postpone many of the Affordable Care Act's taxes on the medical industry. There is great concern about what's going to happen to premiums. Democrats have called for public hearings on the bill. Mitch McConnell says that he hopes to have a vote on the new legislation pretty darn soon, really before the July 4th recess. We'll have two guests with us this hour to talk about health care in America, the number one issue for Americans. Paige Cunningham is a reporter at the Washington Post and author of the Post Daily Health Policy Fact Sheet, The Health 2020. And she just wrote a piece yesterday. Here's what we know about the Senate health care bill. Paige, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be on again.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So why is it that we don't know everything that's in the bill so far? Why are all of these deliberations being taking place completely behind closed doors?
Well, you know, first of all, it's important to point out that in any big legislation on Capitol Hill, a lot of it tends to be hashed out behind closed doors. That was true of the Affordable Care Act. That's true of a lot of other bills. The big difference you see right now is that Republicans aren't even having a pretense of trying to craft this with any input from Democrats or out in the open, whereas they're not holding any hearings on the Senate side on this bill, whereas you saw multiple hearings back when the Affordable Care Act was being written. And I think it's because Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell really just wants to get this done and off his plate. He's realizing that it's extremely tricky to gather the 50 votes that he needs to pass this bill. And I think he kind of views it as kind of, you know, the medicine that they need to take. Just get it done. It's going to be painful. They're open to a lot of criticisms for doing it this way. But he wants to get this vote done off his plate. It's a big political problem for him, and he's just tired of dealing with it.
Mm-hmm. So by tomorrow, the Republicans will see what they've been working on, or we will all see what's been worked on? Or what?
Well, I've been told that this discussion draft, which is legislative text, which is still open to revision, this is going to be released to Republicans, Senate Republicans, in their meeting tomorrow morning. And I have been told by McConnell's office that reporters will have access to it as well. And so I think it'll be pretty widely distributed tomorrow. It's sort of interesting because, you know, you saw back with the House health care bill and in various iterations before it was actually released, there was a lot of leakage. In fact, one of my colleagues over at Politico kept leaking all of these different drafts of the House bill. You haven't seen that happen with the Senate version. I think they've kept it very closely guarded. A lot of the lobbyists that I've talked to have said that staff and lawmakers are unusually quiet about this. So I think they're really on lockdown as they're writing this. And so, you know, we do have some details, as I outlined in my piece yesterday, but there are still some missing pieces that we still need to kind of fill in. We're not quite sure what they're going to look like.
Mm-hmm. And then indeed there will be a vote perhaps by the 4th of July recess next week.
Well, that's assuming that McConnell is able to stitch together these 50 votes that he would need. And that is still very, very much in question. You know, as the discussions have continued on Capitol Hill this week, there have been some pretty negative statements from both the moderate senators that are kind of on the fence, and then a few of the conservatives as well. I would say on the moderate side, the senators most in question are Collins and Murkowski, Portman of Ohio, Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia. They have all said things about the bill that they don't like, such as deeper Medicaid cuts is one thing. It's looking like there won't be extra opioid funding in there, which is something Portman and Capito had wanted. So the things that they're hearing, I think, aren't making them more likely to support the bill. On the conservative side, Mike Lee actually came out on Facebook yesterday and did a whole video criticizing criticizing McConnell for doing this behind closed doors, for not involving himself and other Republicans, and really just doing this among a small group of people. And, you know, he was basically talking to his constituents saying, hey, if you guys are frustrated you haven't seen this bill, I'm frustrated too. I haven't seen it either. And so he's going to be a hard one to talk on board. I think it's pretty much a given that Rand Paul's not going to vote for it. And then, of course, Ted Cruz of Texas is in question as well.
Yeah. So you've been able to glean what you think may be in the bill in a piece that you wrote yesterday. You write that the Senate measure seems poised to enact deeper Medicaid cuts than the House bill. And the House bill was pretty substantial.
Right. So this bill, the Senate version, would probably be a little more gentle on Obamacare's Medicaid expansion. It actually would more gradually phase that out than the House bill would. But in the long term, it would enact more cuts to just the regular Medicaid program that was already in place before Obamacare was passed. And it would do that in sort of this wonky way, but basically by tying the growth rate to a different consumer price index, which would cause the federal contribution to grow more slowly over time. And in turn, that could prompt states to cut their own spending on the program because they'd have fewer federal contributions. And a lot of the states have had trouble funding of their Medicaid programs for years. And so this could result in fewer people being able to get Medicaid and ultimately just fewer people with insurance overall in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And those states where Medicaid has been expanded, where Republican governments have said okay to that, have, it seems to me, pretty much like this. So they're concerned about what would happen should the Senate bill go through, what would happen to all the people who they've been able to insure.
Right. Well, there's about 20 Republicans in the Senate right now from states that did expand Medicaid. And so that's why a lot of these members, like Portman is one of them, have been very concerned about sort of the abrupt approach to Medicaid expansion the House bill took. The House bill would basically have cut off new enrollment within the first year or two and then just phased it out, whereas the Senate bill would not immediately cut that extra federal contribution. It would gradually reduce it over 3 years. And so I think the thought is that, you know, you're not immediately dumping all of these people off of Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. I was reading today that the senators who have been hit pretty hard by the opioid drug crisis, and this statistic amazed me, that in Maine, Susan Collins' state, 8% of all mothers, babies born to those mothers are opioid addicted. 8% of all births. That's pretty substantial.
Yeah, no, it's huge. And there was actually a report from the government out this week showing that hospitalizations and inpatient stays resulting from opioid misuse, it has increased by like 64% and 99% since like 2004. So it's a huge and growing problem. And that's been another top criticism of the House healthcare bill, is that, you know, you enact all of these cuts to Medicaid, and Medicaid is a program that provides care for a lot of people that struggle with opioid addiction. And so, you know, if we see these additional Medicaid cuts in the Senate bill, you better be sure you're going to hear a lot of those criticisms from Democrats, and then you could really risk alienating some of these moderate Republicans. They need to get on board as well.
Yeah. Senate bill, you write, likely to include a more generous version of insurance subsidies, tying them not just to age, as in the House bill, but also to income. This is a real difficult area in terms of what the subsidies are, in terms of premiums and whether or not they're going to go up or down. The whole darn thing gets so complicated that people have no idea, I don't think, of what's going to happen to their premiums and whether or not they're going to get subsidies. And it just seems up in the air. What about these subsidies? What are you writing about?
Well, that's one of the things we're trying to kind of figure out, too. The latest I heard was that it's actually the subsidies are going to be swayed even more toward income instead of age. And this is a really, really interesting development because, you know, Republicans have criticized the Obamacare subsidies for years. The subsidies now that they're discussing in the Senate are virtually the same thing. Mm. You know, they work through their refundable tax credits, and they're subsidies that anybody can get regardless of whether they, you know, pay taxes or not. And so if we do end up seeing it tied to income, you know, I think the view among conservatives and conservative activists is, hey, you're basically just kind of doing what Obamacare did. And we think that this bill keeps too much of the healthcare law in place by basically structuring this in the same way. At the same time, there's, you know, a recognition that if you're going to require or penalize people for not having health insurance, you do have to find a way to make it affordable for them. And tying it to age instead of income just doesn't do the trick. There's a whole swath of people then who really need help buying coverage that can no longer get it.
And will people be required to have health insurance, Paige, or not?
In a sense, yes, and I say that because the Republican bill would repeal the individual mandate. However, it would allow insurers to, for 1 year, charge people a higher premium if they have not maintained continuous coverage. So if somebody, you know, drops out of a plan for 3 months or more, then when they go back to enroll, the insurer would be able to charge them a higher premium for the period of 1 year. So that's sort of the Republican, you know, response to the idea that, you know, you have to have some incentive for healthy people to buy coverage. But I think a lot of healthcare wonks don't see that as a very effective tool for convincing healthy people to buy coverage because, frankly, the penalty just isn't big enough. I mean, if you think about it, if you're healthy, you know, you might think to yourself, well, I'll go without insurance. Maybe I'll take a risk. You know, if I come down with a serious disease, I sign up for coverage. I pay, you know, a 20% or 30% higher premium for 1 year and then it goes back down. No big deal. And so I think that provision is seen as rather toothless in terms of, you know, trying to prod Americans who are younger and healthier towards buying plans.
There's been a lot said and written about how many people would lose their insurance, as high as 23 million people over the next several years. Do you have any numbers on that? Will a lot of people lose their insurance?
Well, it is true that CBO has projected that 23 million fewer people would have coverage in 10 years under the House bill compared to under the Affordable Care Act. There was a report 2 weeks ago from actuaries at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which estimated that number would be considerably lower. I think it was like 13 million fewer uninsured. Anyway, regardless of which number you're going to go with, it is a large swath of people who would not have opportunities for coverage under the Republican bill. The Senate bill, it'll be very interesting to see what the CBO projects on that. The thought is that the language of the bill comes out tomorrow, and then the CBO has been working on scoring it, and the score would come out on Monday, and then the Senate would potentially, you know, assuming they get all of these 50 votes, would vote on the bill at the end of next week. But, you know, that timeline, it's a pretty fast timeline, and it's been criticized by, you know, even some Republicans, as we mentioned earlier, for kind of moving too fast. But as far as what the CBO score will say on the Senate bill, we still need to wait and see actually what the Senate bill does. The thought, I think, is that it would potentially cause fewer people to lose coverage, but not by much. I don't think that the Senate is going to come out with a bill that somehow magically achieves the same insurance coverage levels as under the Affordable Care Act.
So why too fast? What's the problem with taking your time with this and at least having public input? Let's hear from insurers. Let's hear publicly from doctors and hospitals and patients. And let's hear from everybody. Why not?
Well, I think you have to take a step back and look at historically how have Republicans interacted with healthcare policy. And historically, it is just not their favorite topic. There are few Republicans left in Congress who were even around when the Affordable Care Act was passed. A lot of these freshman members have grown up on just promising to repeal and replace Obamacare without really understanding what it does. And so you have a pretty thin bench when it comes to Republicans who have really good ideas on health policy. And so I think that McConnell and other Republican leaders realized that it was a bit of a losing situation for them. I mean, there are some good ideas that Republicans have, but nobody's really solved this problem of how to make sure that everybody has health insurance without pretty heavy subsidies from the federal government.
Right.
And basically on any issue, if you pit a Republican against a Democrat, the Democrat is always going to be willing to spend more federal money, and the Republican is going to say, no, we should, reduce the federal footprint and enable people to buy health insurance by themselves. But that's a really tricky problem because health insurance is extremely expensive. And so I think it's just a really, really tricky problem. And that's why you see a lot of things in the House Republican bill mimic provisions in the Affordable Care Act, because they just don't know how to bring the uninsured rate down to less than 5% without pretty heavy government subsidization of plans.
Paige Cunningham is our guest, the first part of this show. She's a reporter at the Washington Post, author of the Post's Daily Health Policy Fact Sheet. There aren't many people who have an idea of what's in the Senate bill because it's all being done secretively, but she had an interesting piece yesterday. The Health 202 is what she writes, and here's what we know about the Senate health care bill. She's with us, and then a little bit later, Paul Demko will join us, health care reporter for Politico and Politico Pro. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And let's hear from you. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Always like to read your messages there. And we're on Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network. All right, let's go to phone calls. Justin in Minnesota, our first caller. Hi, Justin.
Hello. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Justin. Go ahead.
I was wondering how any of this health care talk that I've been hearing, and also with the Affordable Care Act and the new health care act, how is this going to affect me and my family and the thousands and millions of Americans that are paying hundreds, I pay over $400 a month for my health insurance, my deductible is $6,000. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not alone. I know there's people that have it way worse than me. How is all this health care behind the doors and all this other stuff, how is this going to affect us?
Right. That's a good question. How can we figure that out, Paige?
Well, I think the first question to ask, I guess what I would wonder is, do you have employer-sponsored coverage or coverage through the marketplace?
Employer.
Okay. So I would say that all of this discussion is going to have less impact on you when we're talking about the Affordable Care Act. We're mostly talking about people who don't have employer-sponsored coverage. For the most part, the ACA left the employer-sponsored system in place. It did make some changes. It beefed up some plans here and there, but pretty much left that system the same. I would say probably the best criticism of the Affordable Care Act is that it didn't really have a lot of mechanisms to bring costs down for insurance. And so it's still the case as it was prior to the ACA, that if you have employer-sponsored coverage, typically your employer kicks in a lot for your premium, and so that you're not paying your full monthly cost. I do actually have a bit of bright news on that front. Premiums in the individual market on the marketplaces have been skyrocketing, but premiums for employer-sponsored plans have actually been growing more slowly than in past years. From about 2000 to 2010, there was huge, rapid growth in employer-sponsored coverage, and that actually has slowed down a little bit. Now, it's still getting more expensive every year. It's not the prices are coming down, but it's growing more slowly, and we're not entirely sure of the reason for that, but that's actually a bit of bright news. But, if you have employer-sponsored coverage, you actually don't really have to worry that much about all of this debate in Washington, because that mainly affects people that are in the marketplaces and on Medicaid.
And if you're not an employer sponsor, then how do you figure out if you're, a middle-class family and you're seeing your premiums go up, which they have under Obamacare, how do you know how you will be affected by the new bill? If your premiums will go up, if they'll go down, everybody wants to know that.
Right. No, absolutely. That's a great point. As people are, thinking ahead to next year. I will say the House bill would take a couple of years, I believe, to for the new structure of premiums or of subsidies to kick in. The Republicans have said repeatedly, you know, you can't immediately enact these changes. You have to allow a period of phase in. So I would imagine for next year, for 2018, things are going to look pretty similar to how they looked this year. But going further than that into the future, certainly all of this talk about how to structure the subsidies will have a huge impact on people who are buying in the marketplaces. You know, it could look very different depending on how old you are. You know, things could look better potentially for people who are, you know, higher earners because the subsidies are based on age. And so if you're older but you're a higher earner, you actually could possibly get a larger subsidy than you do under the Affordable Care Act, which is sort of interesting, or under the House bill at least. Of course, those subsidies are going to look different under the Senate bill. But you're absolutely right that that's also one of the biggest criticisms against Republicans is that there is all of this uncertainty and they really need to, you know, make clear to Americans who are relying on these marketplaces and Medicaid expansion for their coverage what they're going to do with
right.
all of it.
Right, yeah, they're worried, understandably. Cheryl in Verona, hi.
Hi, yes. I just have a question. Aside from the health care specifics, Bernie Sanders has been talking about the potential tax break for the wealthy, which was part of one of the cogs in the Affordable Care Act that helped fund it. What's the specifics on that we know right now?
You know what? You just asked me about one of the taxes, I don't know as much about. I have to admit, I've done a lot of writing about the health insurance tax, which is something that the insurers have really been on the drumbeat to kind of get repealed, and the medical device tax. But this tax on the wealthy is a real tax. He's not just making it up. I know that. It has to do, I believe, with it's different than the Cadillac tax, which taxes these high cost health plans. But yeah, I would have to get back to you on that one because I need to look more into what that particular tax would be.
Yeah, and we can always ask our next guest about that as well. In terms of the health insurance tax, they make a lot of money. What's wrong with taxing them?
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, they agreed to this tax when the Affordable Care Act was passed back in 2010. You know, the Obama administration got the industry at the table and said, hey, we're going to require people to buy coverage. We're going to provide all these subsidies. You know, this is what you guys are getting out of the deal. So you got to kick in, you know, a tax. And as it often happens in Washington, as industry agrees to something and then after the fact, you know, they want to have, you know, their contribution eliminated. They have succeeded. Insurers have succeeded in convincing Congress twice, I believe, to delay the implementation of the HIT tax. As things stand right now, it is set to go into effect for the first time in January. The argument from insurers is they're saying, well, you know, if we have this extra tax, that's going to show up in the premiums because we're going to have to, you know, raise the premiums based on the tax. Right. And, you know, but this is... you know, you go to any member of the industry and they're going to try to get their tax repealed. You know, it's the same thing from the medical device industry. And, it, you know, it's
sure,
that's another question right now in the Senate bill is whether, you know, the House bill would have repealed every tax except for the Cadillac tax. And it would have delayed that one for a long time. So but there's word that the senators are thinking of keeping some of the taxes still in order to pay for some of the extra spending if they add that in.
Mm-hmm. One more call for you and let's go to Brent in Toma. Hi, Brent.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Love your show. I just wanted to say that, you know, a lot of these ideas from Obamacare and the Romney Care famously is, you know, come from the Heritage Foundation and, you know, the mandate and things like that were already Republican ideas. So doesn't that help explain, you know, why they couldn't come up with their own ideas in all these years? They've been wanting to repeal, replace, repeal. They repealed it 60 times in the House and all that. They didn't really have any other ideas. That was their idea. But we had a Democrat and a black person, you know, President Obama is the one that put it into, you know, put it through. And so then they just had to rebel against their own ideas. Isn't that part of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have some good analysis there. You're absolutely right that the individual mandate idea came from conservatives. And yeah, when you really line up the Affordable Care Act with like the Republican health care bill, I would say the biggest difference is in its vision for Medicaid. You know, the Affordable Care Act envisions Medicaid as covering a lot of Americans. I mean, Americans up to 133% of the federal poverty level, which was a huge expansion beyond where a lot of the state programs were at. And that's something Democrats are perfectly fine with. I mean, they see Medicaid as a program that is really important for low-income people. You know, yeah, it's got some problems with, you know, provider shortages and this and that, but, you know, overall, it's a relatively cost-effective way to get people covered. Republicans don't really see it that way. I mean, they see it as a sort of a negative thing by putting more people on, you know, government-run health care. And so that's the biggest difference right there. And that's one of the biggest reasons, frankly, that the House bill would cover fewer people, is because they would roll back Medicaid so much. But, you know, to your point about a lot of their ideas being, you know, even embedded within the Affordable Care Act, you know, this idea of tax credits to help people buy private coverage, that is an idea that Republicans have signed on to. Mm-hmm. They just don't want the credits to be quite as generous as the tax credits under the Affordable Care Act. So when you look at the policies, politically speaking, you would think the Affordable Care Act and the Republican bill are miles apart, but there actually are more similarities between them than most people realize.
Thank you ever so much, Paige, for being with us. We'll look forward to your reporting tomorrow, and hopefully you get your hands on the bill.
I hope so, too. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Paige. Paige Cunningham, reporter at the Washington Post, author of the Post Daily Health Policy Fact Sheet. Paul Demko is joining us now, and we'll continue to take your phone calls. Brent, thanks for yours. 800-486-8655 is our number. We're talking about what the senators, Republicans, may be up to in terms of fashioning a health care bill that would replace the Affordable Care Act. We may get a glimpse of it, in case you're just tuning us in, tomorrow. Reporters may, and Republicans may, and the public may tomorrow as well. What do you think of what you've heard so far, and what do you want? Is anybody asking you what you want? Paul Demko is healthcare reporter for Politico and Politico Pro, and we thank you so much, Paul, for being with us. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. So who's fashioning this bill among the Republicans? Because there are Republicans who are complaining. We don't know what's in it either. Who's putting it together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been this 13-member working group that has been meeting, almost daily to talk about healthcare issues. But the understanding is really that even they aren't involved in sort of the nitty-gritty writing of the bill, that this is really McConnell's office, the Senate Majority Leader McConnell's office, really guiding this process.
Hmm. So his staffers are the ones who are in charge of writing this?
Absolutely.
What is the public sentiment about this? Are people okay? They're so upset with the Affordable Care Act that it's okay for people to be behind closed doors fashioning a bill? Or are you hearing from Americans saying, wait a second, and from doctors and hospitals and insurance companies and everybody, we'd like to know what's in here and we'd like some input?
Absolutely. I think there is a lot of people upset about the process, and that it's been so secretive, and that there's been no public input. But the question is, will that really matter in the end? If the Republicans, if the Senate Republicans can get their members on board, if they can get them to coalesce around a plan and ultimately pass this, then I don't think, sort of concerns about process and transparency are necessarily going to be what the American public focuses on. Eventually this bill will be released. You can't keep it secret forever.
Right.
So once that happens, hopefully tomorrow morning, then this bill is going to get a lot of scrutiny. It's not going to be a long period of scrutiny, but there will be intense interest in this, and they're going to have to defend the bill that they've crafted in the back rooms.
And they're also going to have to defend it to people who have been a little bit upset about what happened with the House bill. Do you see moderate Republicans and conservative Republicans being able to agree on whatever it is that's coming out of this committee tomorrow?
It seems like they're getting close. I mean, I think that's very much up in the air. You've got moderates particularly concerned about what's going to happen to Medicaid expansion and how they're going to wind that down without hurting people, and concern about folks who need treatment for opioid addiction, and you've got folks concerned about cuts to Planned Parenthood, and then you've got the conservatives who really want to get rid of the Obamacare coverage protections because mm-hmm. they believe all these rules and regulations unnecessarily drive up the cost of coverage, and that if you get rid of some of those rules, you'll have prices come down across the board. And that was really a key sticking point, if you'll remember, among some of the Freedom Caucus folks during the House debate as well.
Mm-hmm. From what you've been able to glean so far, Paul, who do you think is going to benefit from this? Who's going to be able to get expanded insurance coverage that won't cost an arm and a leg? Who's going to be hurt by this? How many people will lose insurance as a result of this? Do we know any of that? What's going to happen with the middle-class person and who's on the Affordable Care Act right now? What can they expect? What can all of us expect?
Yeah, I mean, it is tough to say with the Senate bill. What we know from the House bill is that the CBO projected that 23 million people would lose coverage. The biggest chunk of those folks are people on Medicaid, particularly in states that have authorized the expansion up to 138% of the poverty level. So there's a lot of folks. That's going to be, wound down, whether it's starting in 3 years or 4 years, depends on exactly what the Senate decides to do. But that's going to be wound down, and those people are going to lose coverage. They're also going to overhaul the way that Medicaid is funded so that it'll be a per person dollar amount that each state will get. So that's going to dramatically cut the program as well. I mean, altogether in the House package, you're talking about more than $800 billion in cuts. Mm. Now, in terms of benefits, I think Republicans are hoping that by loosening up the rules and having more of a free market system, we'll be able to drive down the cost of coverage across the board. And that could be particularly attractive for some of the younger and healthier people that have been such a struggle for insurers to enroll under the Affordable Care Act. We just haven't gotten enough of those young, healthy folks, despite the individual mandate, to really make these marketplaces work.
What about pre-existing conditions?
The Republicans swear up and down over and over again that they will protect people with pre-existing conditions. We got to see the details. We got to see what they're actually crafting. But folks like Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana, that's been a big thing for him. He went on Jimmy Kimmel to talk about it, and had said, anything we do has to protect pre-existing conditions. And he seems to be on board with what's being talked about in the Senate. So we'll see what it ultimately looks like. But they promised that it will.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go to phone calls. Roger in Monroe. Hi. You there, Roger? Well, I don't know where you are, but call us back. Tim in Sheboygan, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, I was just kind of trying to double back on a previous caller. And the question that I have, the previous caller, I believe, was bringing up is, what about those of us that have employer-sponsored insurance? How is this going to affect us? Meaning, I've paid my insurance premiums, and an employer has paid some portion of the premium on my behalf mm-hmm. for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've paid my deductibles. I've paid my co-pays. I've done okay. So, what's this? What's here for me? What does this do for me?
All right. Does it do anything, Paul?
Well, that's really an interesting question because the debate gets so distorted. We focus so much on the individual market, and that is really just 5% of the public is enrolled in individual plans. And the vast majority of people are like the caller. They get coverage through work, and there's no reason that should change significantly. That's one of the things that gets forgotten about Obamacare is how little it affected the employer-sponsored market. I mean, there were predictions that some employers would drop coverage and push people into the exchanges, but that really didn't come to pass. And we've really seen pretty much the status quo in this employer plans. So I think the CBO does predict again that some employers would drop coverage under the House bill. But really, for most Americans, I think it's somewhere around 150 million Americans who get coverage through their employer, this shouldn't really change anything for them.
It won't affect their premiums? Isn't there some kind of connection between what happens with Affordable Care Act, or what happens with what the Republicans put together, and how wouldn't that naturally have some kind of an impact on all kinds of health care premium costs, for example?
Yes, that's true. I mean, if you change the rules, like under the Affordable Care Act, you know, there were 10 essential health benefits that every plan must cover.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, costs money and potentially drives up the cost of premiums. So yes, it is true that if you loosen those rules, loosen those regulations, allow skimpier coverage, it could decrease premiums for people. Another thing you saw under the ACA was you did see a movement, it had already begun, but I think accelerated towards more high deductible plans for employer-sponsored coverage. So folks were planning more out of pocket when they go to actually access health care. So it could affect those things.
Yeah. We had a question earlier, and I'm wondering if you have more knowledge of this. What is the tax on the wealthy that has contributed to subsidies for those who are on the Affordable Care Act? And would the Senate bill get rid of those taxes?
No, the Senate bill, as I understand it right now, is going to get rid of those taxes. There's just a question of whether under the House plan it would be sort of retroactive back to 2016.
Mm.
And my understanding is the latest talk from the Senate is that these would be, that this would take effect like in 2018, so that there wouldn't be quite as huge of a revenue loss. I don't know the specific details of the tax on the wealthy that you mentioned. I'm afraid. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Let's thank Tim for the call. Let's go next to David in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, David.
Yeah, my main thing is make insurance again. I mean, I think a person who's 18 years old and someone's 90 should pay the same price for the same insurance. Yeah, it's healthier, but hey, eventually that 18-year-old, if he gets good health insurance, he might get to be 90. It's just, yeah, that way you could advertise the price, and that would drive the cost down. And for the poor people to have the tax credit for the poor to help pay for the premiums. I mean, keep it simple.
Keep it simple. It sure ain't simple, Paul, is it?
Well, I mean, that does sound something like, you know, what you're hearing more and more from Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly, but, you know, some kind of a single-payer system where, everybody would chip in and everybody would get coverage. I think we're a long, long ways from that just because of the cost and because it would shake up the current system so much with so many people getting coverage through work. But maybe, you know, depending on what happens is with this, maybe you'll start to see a discussion of a Medicare buy-in, which, you know, you've heard from Democrats as well, like, say, people who are 55 to 65
yes.
could potentially buy into Medicare, because those are the folks that coverage is just so expensive for right now, people in that sort of near-retirement category who aren't eligible for Medicare but could face really high medical costs.
I'm just thinking that eventually we need a system that's simpler here, and we just can't put up with. We've been debating health care reform in this country for years and years. It took a long time to get the Affordable Care Act. It's only been in existence for a little while, and now here we are substantially changing the system that took a long time to put together. I don't think Americans are going to put up with a whole lot of changes in this. They want rules that are understandable, that aren't nearly as complicated, and that last for more than a couple of years. Don't you think?
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And I think there are a lot of problems with the Affordable Care Act. There's no doubt about that. There need to be some fixes to particularly these marketplaces where, you know, just today you saw in Wisconsin, Anthem, pulling out of the
yes.
exchange there. So you've got a lot of problems. I think a lot of folks in the healthcare industry wish that
Republicans would try to address the problems in the existing system rather than sort of kind of start from scratch with a whole nother, you know, big overhaul of the system. There were ways that they could have addressed the current issues that wouldn't require, you know, just a fundamental rethinking of the system. So, but our politics are such that that you know, healthcare is just so toxic and partisan that that's the standoff we end up with, and everybody's trying to, you know, everything that the Democrats do is so terrible and horrible and apocalyptic that it has to be gotten rid of in its entirety, and I'm afraid, you know, that the Democrats will have the same response to this Republican bill if it ever gets enacted.
Yeah. And it's our health care, for heaven's sake. It shouldn't be a partisan issue. It's just our health care. It's important to people. Paul Demko, health care reporter for Politico and Politico Pro, our guest. Our number, thanks for your call, David, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network. All right, Nancy in Waupaca. Hi.
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 Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is such an important topic. I had 2 points. One of them, and you've touched on both of them slightly. One of them, several people have talked about how not much is going to change if you get your insurance through your employer. However, the Affordable Care Act changed so many things that benefit everyone no matter where you get your insurance, such as free preventative medication, exams, mammograms, colonoscopies, birth control, children covered to age 26.
Yes.
All of those things are affect everyone who has health insurance. And it, at least in the health in the House bill, it looked like all of that was going to go away. So to me, that's a significant change. The other point that I wanted to make was we can't keep talking about premiums as if that's the cost. I am a 2-time cancer survivor. I am dreading this going away because I could get insurance for $25 a month and it won't cover anything. Our medical bills were over $100,000 last year.
Ooh.
And we didn't have to pay more than about $6,000 thanks to the ACA. And but if those go away, I'm in a high risk pool. I'm 59 and you can't tell me I'm going to have a low premium and make me feel happy. That's only a small portion of the total cost.
Yeah, good points.
It's a great point. We, you know, before the ACA, you did have these high-risk pools in many states, including Wisconsin, and they did not work very well. Mainly that was because they were insufficiently funded, but they had all kinds of rules that made them just very ineffective in terms of, like, you could get coverage, but you couldn't get any coverage for, say, cancer for the first year you were enrolled, or there was a waiting list to actually get in. So, you know, that is you know, something that needs to be scrutinized as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. And what about her, all of those things, that was a good point, that apply to those who have employer-covered insurance, children till 26, coverage for mammograms and colonoscopies, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, Republicans are saying they're going to keep some of those things under 26, the pre-existing conditions. But there are some of those, guaranteed coverage things that would go away under the House bill. And particularly, you know, that's where the House kind of reached its agreement on an amendment that would allow states to have waivers, so that the states would kind of make those decisions about it, what protections are guaranteed. So I think that's going to also be a big discussion moving forward, and we'll see what exactly the Senate does on that front.
Mm-hmm. Nancy, thanks for your great call. Jennifer in Waukesha, hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Something I'm wondering, it seems like it's a taboo subject to bring up, but why do we as a country not talk more about implementing socialized medicine? I mean, everybody knows there are, you know, multiple countries around the world that have implemented socialized medicine where, you know, you're basically taken care of just by being a citizen of the country. And it seems that, that would take away the bipartisan issue of health care and kind of the environment of, well, they think this is a good idea and we don't think this is a good idea back and forth, just, you know, cover everybody? I mean, is it something that is that impractical to implement, or are there some underlying tones? You know, I've always kind of wondered, you know, a lot of people talk about healthcare as the giant money-making machine, you know. Is there a reason that having everybody covered isn't just as beneficial as, you know, picking and choosing who's mm-hmm. covered? And
right. Why doesn't it happen in this country? We haven't been able to. Go ahead, Paul.
I think you got to go back to the way the system got this way. You got to go back to like World War II, and companies started including healthcare coverage as a benefit to entice workers, and somehow that became, you know, this system that evolved into in people getting their coverage through their work. It doesn't. I don't know if it makes any sense, but that's the system we have in place. And the problem now is that to get to some kind of single-payer socialized system, you'd have to kind of rip out that existing system with, you know, the 150 million people who get coverage through their work. And most people, even though they know the system as a whole is kind of screwed up and doesn't work very well, most people are pretty happy with their coverage. So if you tried to say, okay, all you 150 million folks who like your coverage, we're going to take it away from you, and we're going to move to this government system, there would be bedlam. It would make 2009 and the debate over the Affordable Care Act look like a patty cake.
Do you think we're going to escape bedlam in the next couple of years?
I mean, I think it's going to be very chaotic. I mean, one of the things that I think Republicans are going to learn very quickly is in the current, you know, in this fractured current healthcare landscape that we have, there are no perfect policies. There are always winners and losers, and the losers are not going to be happy. And now they're going to be the ones who are going to be held accountable if indeed they do enact this bill, or even if they don't, because the current system is kind of falling to pieces on their watch. And there's a lot of polling evidence suggesting that, you know, they can try to blame Obama and the Democrats, but now that they're in charge, they're going to be held accountable for what happens.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, thanks so much for your call. Terry in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi. I was wondering, do the U.S. citizens pay for the Congress for their health insurance?
Yeah. What kind of health care do senators, members of Congress have?
Yeah, they get subsidized coverage. They're required to obtain their coverage through the Washington, D.C. exchange marketplace. But yes, they get subsidized coverage just like most workers.
Pretty good, is it?
I don't know the specific details. I mean, they are getting exchange plans. So they are, they're not getting anything better than, you know, typical resident of Washington, D.C. is able to obtain through the insurance exchange. There's no separate policies just for them.
I see. All right, so give us a rundown. Tomorrow, are you sure that you're going to get what is in the bill from the Senate, or they're not even senators, their staff working on this? Or what are they giving you tomorrow? What have they told you?
That's the expectation, that there will be what they are calling a discussion draft released tomorrow. That's the expectation.
Okay. And then there will be public hearings. There won't be, will there?
There will not be public hearings. The expectation is that there will be a score from the Congressional Budget Office on Monday, which could be a big marker, depending on what that looks like, about whether this is going to move forward. And then, they're looking to take amendments. They're going to have unlimited amendments, so Democrats will have an opportunity to weigh in on 20 hours of debate, unlimited amendments, and then supposedly by the end of next week, they're going to vote on this thing. Mm. That's the plan. That could change at any moment, though.
And from what you said earlier, it indicated to me that there may be a fairly good chance that it would be voted up by the end of, before the July 4th break, yes?
I mean, I don't think they've done solid whip counts in terms of exactly where the votes are. But, I mean, you've heard a lot of positive noises coming from the senators, though, in recent days. It seems like, you know, people are kind of, they might be a little upset about the process.
They might be quibbling about that, but you're not hearing real rhetorical broadsides from some of the members. So, I mean, it seems like, you know, there's at least a decent chance. If you had, you know, I mean, they've got to hold on to all but two members, and I think Rand Paul is pretty much a lost cause.
Mm-hmm.
that puts their margin of slippage down to one. So it's going to be very, very tough
to
get a threat.
I guess. So, yeah. Paul, thank you ever so much for being with us. We'll check in again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Paul Demko, healthcare reporter for Politico and Political Pro. We also thank Paige Cunningham, reporter at The Washington Post and author of their daily health policy fact sheet. Thanks very much to Colleen Leahy for producing the hour and to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in Milwaukee. A reminder, we're with you again tomorrow. We're going to be talking about that 6th congressional race in Georgia, and also we'll look at the South Carolina race and a recent survey of employers finding that college grads need more skills. That's mañana.